Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
This way you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my new friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You get our son.
Happy birthday, Polly.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 131. Jeff, Ken, Jack, Trill, coming at you on this Sunday. First episode of the month of March. That's cool. This is
John
March.
Rothstein voice. Yeah, he beat me to it. I love that guy.
He's amazing. He's fucking pure.
He just does it.
We have a pretty cool show today. A good slew of news topics, some interesting news topics. It's one I'm very excited to talk about, and also an interview with Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons. Very fun interview.
The legend. We love J.K., don't we?
We do. He gave us a great interview, very funny, and he did something for us at the end. Slipped into an old character and did something that is very fun to listen to. You'll enjoy it.
Was it the guy from Oz?
Yes.
Okay.
Hank Schlesinger.
Did he do a yellow M&M voice?
No, we didn't go down that road.
Probably for the best. I got two movie pitches I want to run by you guys. Okay.
Let's hear it.
Okay, the first one is called The Long Con. There's probably a movie already called that, but just bear with me. Joe Evans, played by Jason Bateman, plays a divorced party planner struggling to make ends meet. Depressed and cruising Craigslist one night, he stumbles on a friendly, furry community where he blends right in. He backs himself into planning the biggest furry con in the Midwest, despite knowing nothing about the community, but also finds himself learning how to live again.
Okay.
Sounds like it's an actual movie that you just made.
It's a pitch.
It's a good pitch. Well received. I liked it.
Okay. Second one is the Untitled Joe Rogan Experience Project. I don't know. Advanced aliens land on Earth years in the future after humanity has wiped itself out. They find an old MacBook Pro and are able to restore it, and they discover thousands of episodes of Joe Rogan's podcast. They piece together a picture of humanity from listening to the podcast.
I like that one better for the comedic element.
It's all like flashbacks of like what they think's happening, and Joe Rogan's in this. He's playing himself.
So it's all kind of through the eyes and lens of Joe Rogan.
Yeah, they,
can one of the aliens be voiced by Seth Rogen?
Sure. Almost we could get Seth Rogen there. We could get J.K. Simmons to be an alien. He could be the head alien.
Oh,
he's got a good authoritative voice. Man, my brain's breaking. Anyway, I like this one because I think they piece together a pretty interesting view of humanity.
I think Michael Douglas should be the head alien.
Okay.
Get it?
Sure. There are no bad ideas at this point. Oh yeah, because he claimed he got cancer from oral sex, right?
Yep. What a fucking wild claim! Oh, I love you, Michael Douglas. Come on the pod.
Can you disprove it?
I can. I'm not saying he didn't.
I can't disprove it.
Dude, just loved the cooch too much. Eating that cooch just fucking got himself cancer. I can't say that that's incorrect.
And I can't think of another reason to explain why that would happen.
There's literally no other way that could happen. Scientifically impossible.
I bought an essential oil diffuser.
Really? What'd you put in it? What's loaded?
Polio vaccine.
Nice.
Expensive? Meningitis vaccine.
No, it's a lavender. I like lavender. You can't get a good joke in these days without being an anti-vax joke, which it seemed to have really taken off.
I got my lavender one up here too.
All right. Well, let's kick it into some news. Dark Phoenix. This trailer dropped the day after we recorded, my favorite thing. And Shazam will be coming out with a trailer tomorrow, the day after you record. I always like that. Makes me happy. Mm. But anyway, the Dark Phoenix trailer, actually it dropped hours after we recorded because this was the process for them to release this trailer. Keep in mind, this is the flagship part of this franchise, is the main storyline. The sentiment around this movie is that it's going to stink. Everyone's been making fun of it. Not a lot of good talk online about it. So what they did was they said, we're going to drop it during Fallon at midnight in the eastern part of the United States, 11 p.m. for the other half or the other part of the country. So half the country is getting this at 11 or on. Not to say people in the West don't matter. I'm just, half of your country is probably asleep. And recently trailers have dropped in the morning, mid-afternoon, when the hype can be huge. No, they did it late on a Wednesday night. And then they teased the trailer, and on Fallon, they released a 10-second clip, or it was like 20 seconds, so it wasn't even the full trailer. You're like, okay. They didn't tweet it out, so they released it in the middle of a like 8-minute-long YouTube interview with Jessica Chastain. All right, so that's already hard to now consume. And then they said the full trailer will be online after Fallon. So the full thing didn't come online until after the show was over, nearly 1 a.m. Eastern time. Great marketing. The trailer finally dropped, and now we're here. What did you think about the Dark Phoenix trailer? I have many thoughts.
My favorite part of it was Jennifer Lawrence and her makeup, obviously, for her to come back to this movie, for her to I mean, she's under contract, but she can probably say, I don't really want to do this, and I'm not going to do a good job. And they're like, what can we do to make you do a good job? And she says, I want to spend about 15 minutes a day in the makeup chair. And her Mystique makeup looks like she showed up for Universal Studios Islands of Fun version of Mystique. Like they went from 5 hours in the makeup chair to somebody just coming in 15 minutes before the park opens, blowing some blue on their face like Tobias from Arrested Development, and then just showing up and doing the X-Men character. She wants out of that, and I don't blame her. I'd want out of it too. I want out of it as a viewer.
Oh, that's your rant.
She's checked out. She's done.
And her character clearly dies in that trailer. Like,
oh yeah,
not even like they may as well just had a fucking freeze frame that said Jennifer Lawrence will only be in part of this movie. Like, very clearly her character dies multiple times. They say it. So she gets her wish.
You gotta appreciate them just going out of their way to just spoil it for you, so we don't have to go to it then, right? So like now I'm back in on the X-Men universe. I might not even see this movie because that's essentially them subtly telling us, yeah, don't see it, but get ready for the next one. Like, we know we fucked up a couple times already, so this is our gift to you. So thanks to the brilliant minds over at X-Men Studios, and I'll see you when the deal goes through with Marvel and Disney.
Oh, Jeff, what do you think as a comic book guy, as the comic book guy?
Okay, so the Mystique makeup, I think it's less rubbery at least than the previous ones, but it's just way too less rubbery. Like,
it looks like Cookie Monster.
It looks fine. It doesn't look horrible, but just in comparison to the old character, it looks nothing like the character.
No, it looks nothing like the old character. It's just Jennifer Lawrence with paint on her face. Like, it's just, that's what it is.
More power to her. That's like the meme. It's like freshman year versus senior year.
Yep.
Bad this guy luck, looks Brian. Like Hades in Hercules, like that same yes. shade of weird blue.
Yep. But let's talk about the funniest part of the trailer. Hands down. I'm gonna put the clip in right here because it went viral. It's very funny. It's Cyclops played by what's his
Taylor
name?
Sheridan.
Taylor Sheridan from Ready Player One, and he's saying like he's like, Charles, what are we gonna do? What are we gonna do, Charles? And James McAvoy's Charles is like, I don't know what we're gonna do, and it's so fucking bad. I'm gonna play it right here.
Tell me how we fix this, Charles. Tell me what to do.
I don't know what to do.
Taylor Sheridan is the writer for Sicario and all those other movies, by the way. I was fucking with you.
Yeah, wait, it's Taylor. No, it's Sheridan something, right?
I think Sheridan is involved, but Taylor Sheridan is for sure the writer of Sicario.
Yeah, no, that's, you're definitely right on that. But now, what's this kid's name again?
I totally forgot.
It's one of the two names. It's Ty Sheridan. All right. That's why.
There we go.
That's why it sounded right. But you actually, you might have done that to me on Friday, too. I asked who it was, and I think you just said Taylor Sheridan. I just rolled with it.
I mean, it sounds right, doesn't it? I didn't skip a beat.
Oh, my God. But that exchange between the two of them, unbelievable that they put that in the trailer. The dialogue is, I mean, it was the first, like, think about all the trailers that come out. Granted, the genie for Aladdin, that was not good. But think about the viral things that happen after trailers to move it on. Like, oh, did you see this thing? Especially in comic book movies. Like, did you see this Easter egg? Did you notice this? The one viral thing to come out of this trailer was that clip of of Cyclops and Charles. I don't know what I'm going to do. Awful. Funny, though.
Is that's the only real tension that they've developed through this entire series. They were on the right path with Days of Future Past and the government angle. I really like that. But then it just became the Eric and Charles show.
Yeah, which,
I guess so many movies have done that same concept, though, of like the mutant versus the human government trying to suppress them because they're scared. Even what was that movie with Amanda Stenberg that came out about mutants where they were like,
oh,
you know what I'm talking about? I don't remember because it was so forgettable, but it was like that same thing.
Divergent space.
Nope. Oh, yes, but not the same one we're talking about. But yeah, that like they all just ripped that same fucking concept. So I get them trying to explore different avenues, but at the same time, it's like you're saying. They made it into the Eric versus Charles show. And who gives a fuck about that anymore?
What's the different avenue?
But no, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I think it's good for them not to do government v. mutants anymore because, first of all, that's a wash. Mutants win 10 out of 10 times. Second of all, like, it's just they need to have a better – I don't think that the current storyline, right, of, like, having it just being Eric and or having Eric going back and forth from the good side to the bad side, I don't think that's a good substitute for that tension, but I think that's still better than overdoing the government versus mutants thing.
All right, but now the tension's around Jean Grey, though. Yes. Now the tension's placed on Jean Grey being the Dark Phoenix, folks.
So
a mutant too powerful.
By the way,
I don't remember
Ken Jack. It's The Darkest Minds. That's the movie.
Damn,
The Incredibles. Actually,
The Darkest Phoenix. I think a part of this plot line with Dark Phoenix, right, is like she gets like taken over by some celestial mutant. I want to say, is that going to be Jessica Chastain's character?
I don't know, but I'm if I were to have to bet on it, I would say yes. Right, that would make sense.
I only remember it vaguely, but like this is again, I'm not a comic book movie person.
Yeah, It wasn't awful upon second watch, but it also just doesn't interest me. It just doesn't get me going because I do like the series. And Days of Future Past, probably top five comic book movie I've ever seen. I mean, that was fucking incredible. Amazing movie. First Class, also great. But then Apocalypse wasn't so good. And now they're also redoing a storyline of the movie that everybody hates from the franchise. Well, not counting X-Men Origins Wolverine, but that's like that doesn't count for anything. But
fuck
people
yeah,
hate
that movie ruled.
X3 was bad, and They're kind of redoing a lot of it. Also very funny to think that this movie is set in the 90s and they have to age so much to fit up with the storyline for X2 and X3 because those are the early 2000s, and this movie takes place like 6 years before Professor X and Magneto look like they're 90 years old. They just become decrepit humans. So I do like that.
Do you remember there's a scene where they initially pick up Jean Grey, right? It's like Magneto and Professor X, they both like go to her house or something when she's a kid. And they look already like they're like 50 or 60. They de-aged the both of them, Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. And they still look much older than McAvoy and Fassbender look.
Oh, yeah. Terrible. It was so bad. If you haven't seen that scene, it's a must see. The CGI work is bad. Like, people hated the Princess Leia CGI. That CGI was like almost like it was like a joke. Like somebody was doing a bit on the internet.
You know, look great, Grand Moff Tarkin. That was a great CGI. I thought
I liked Tarkin. People hated it though. See,
it was okay. It was kind of weird.
It was weird. I think it just physically or visually looked good.
Yeah, it creeped me out a little.
What, having a dead person CGI'd?
No, I mean, you could just it hit that uncanny valley point for me where I'm just like, I know this is CGI, and it's unnerving something deep in my psyche about how humans are a threat to be replicated.
Kind of like that, awakening your inner fear about the robots.
Yeah, just self preservation thing. I think what this comes down to is I hate this cast. I just hate.
Yep, me too.
I hate James McAvoy as Professor X. I hate Fassbender as Magneto. I hate Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique. I don't know how Mystique became such a big player in these X-Men movies.
Her power is so lame. She just transforms into people.
I don't get it. Mystique is some. Growing up watching the animated series, I'm guessing she was a character from the comics and probably is a very major character. But I just don't like the character. I don't like. She's given a lot of attention that I think can be like. There's other cooler characters. Like, what about Rogue? What about Archangel who got fucking stiffed?
Or what about Quicksilver? You know, all we're going to get is one Quicksilver scene that takes 3 months to edit, and then he's going to really not do much the rest of the movie.
They already showed it. They showed part of that scene in that trailer. It looks sick as hell, though.
It does. It always does look cool. That Apocalypse was not good, but that scene, again, was really neat when they did that with
him. That was really sick.
Nicholas Holt as the Beast. And Sophie Turner. Sophie Turner's fine. I like Sophie Turner, but I just don't care about any of these actors I normally like in any of these roles.
What about Jessica Chastain as an addition?
And I pulled it up on the Wikipedia, an alien shapeshifter who manipulates the Phoenix. So it sounds like you're right on that one. Time to just reboot the whole thing and cast Ansel Elgort in his rightful place.
Ansel Elgort as Beast.
As Wolverine.
Yeah, Ansel Elgort's a Colossus guy, in my opinion.
What?
Cyclops. And I hate Cyclops. I hate every on-screen adaptation of Cyclops.
Who played the first Cyclops?
Marston.
Matt LeBlanc? Yeah. I don't know.
Matt LeBlanc. Imagine that.
How you doing?
I don't know. Maybe.
what a great mashup that was.
Maybe it'll be good. I don't know. But right now, I'm just like I'm not so out on it. I just like it does nothing.
I want it to be good. I'm not rooting for its failure. Like we said last podcast, it's hard to be optimistic because we know so much has been going on with this particular branch of Marvel licensed movies, the Fox branch, and. McAvoy is just such a bad Professor X. He looks nothing like him. He looks like he's doing an SNL skit of Professor X in perpetuity.
I like him as young Professor X, though. As a follow-up.
Having a young Professor X, I cannot do that. I do not see Professor X as a young person. He came out of the womb fucking 9 years old.
Toby Jones.
The second the hair came off, when they shaved the hair, it just...
Dude, they didn't even shave it. They had to make it a plot point. When Apocalypse sucked his life out, he made him bald.
Right.
And the worst part is all these movies are origin stories. We've gotten this big four-movie run of fucking origin stories.
It's a good point.
It's so boring.
Except maybe Days of Future Past.
I like Days of Future Past.
Yeah, you're right. I like Days of Future Past, but I like that because it just... The scenes were so cool. The time period was so cool. I loved RFK Stadium being lifted up from its roots and then just dropped around the Capitol.
That was sick.
Or the White House. I can't remember.
I mean, again, that's one of my top five best comic book movies I've ever seen all time. I think it's like 93 or something. It's an incredible movie. Just it's a shame that Apocalypse was just a major down from that movie. It just fell off a cliff, basically. The whole thing kind of fell apart. With Apocalypse in terms of like my interest of the main storyline, especially because of Deadpool and Logan, we got those offshoot movies that were, they took risks. They were a bit daring and they were just better. So it didn't help that Apocalypse wasn't great, but like there's other things that I liked more. Again, despite the fact that Days of Future Past is pretty fucking incredible. So I think that's all we got on that one.
Rest in peace, Stan Lee.
Major rip.
Hey, if that's the one thing we get out of this.
Rest in peace, John Candy.
Yeah. John Candy died 25 years ago today. What a legend. Fucking incredible. Also, Ken Jack and I seen Captain Marvel tomorrow night, Monday, March 4th. Very, very excited. I can't wait for the Captain Marvel part and see how she is and Sam Jackson. But Ben Mendo, I'm very pumped for. You can almost not tweet it because then people are like, are you really minimizing the movie to a post-credit scene? But I'm very excited to see the eventual Avengers Endgame tease in the mid-credit scene. It's going to get the juices flowing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very excited.
Then you only got like a month till it actually comes out, which is crazy.
Man, there's going to be a trailer probably dropping in 2 weeks. It's going to be likely the first weekend of the NCAA tournament like it was last year. So pretty cool.
It's good times.
Pretty fucking That's cool. Crazy. How about Hellboy? That's another trailer that came out this past week. The Hellboy Red Band trailer, the second trailer. David Harbour, who hates Ken Jack, right?
He's the one that hates you. It's the other. That's the other. That's the science professor from Stranger Things hates me. Right. Randy something.
As long as David Harbour likes you, I mean, that's the one that matters.
He loves me.
It's the one that matters much more.
Big fan.
Trailer looked cool. We liked the first one, so that shouldn't come as too much of a surprise, but this is going to be just a lot of fun, I feel like. I mean, the movie might stink, who knows, but it's going to be fun. Like, no matter what, you're going to have a good time seeing this one, I feel like.
Yeah, it looked really cool.
I like that one scene of him coming out of, like, hell or whatever with, like, the fire crown and a giant-ass sword. Mm-hmm. Looks sick as hell.
I like Blood Rain. Anytime you can get Blood Rain.
Yes.
Neat. I think there was some kissing in the Blood Rain, which is, my dream.
What was the song they were playing during that?
Oh, man. I just watched it again, too. I forget. But
it was really good. It was a good rendition.
Good song choice. Good song choice. It was a cool-looking trailer. I was into it. I'm excited for this movie. And again, I like the last Hellboy. Hellboy Golden Army, that was a good movie. I thought it was better than the first one.
Major rip to Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
Yes. not dead. Don't actually say he's dead.
Don't definitely not a dead human being. But was not asked.
Either way, rest in peace. If you're asleep right now, hope it's peaceful.
Wasn't asked to come back as Hellboy. Will Smith out as Deadshot. We touched on this, I think, briefly at the end of the last podcast, because it broke while we were recording. But Will Smith will not play Deadshot. Deadshot does not sound like he will be in the Suicide Squad sequel.
Canary in the coal mine?
I don't care. I just don't care.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what James Gunn can do here, but it's a little weird that Will Smith doesn't want to be involved in this one.
Why? The first one stunk.
Yeah, but James Gunn, you'd have to assume he could, with that roster of talent, now but missing it, Will Smith, but you could assume he'd make a better one.
I think if you think of this from Will Smith's perspective, right, the first one bombed, and it was like the laughingstock of most comedy movies, even though it did make, or not most comic book movies, that is. It did make like a decent amount of money, but you had
won an Oscar.
Yeah, and won an Oscar for Purple Lamborghini, which you'll forget. But you have James Gunn coming on, which is obviously a great director, but like people are obviously, quote unquote, mar him in controversy. So maybe he just wants to wash his hands clean of it and just stick to Bad Boys 3 or whatever.
Yeah, and I didn't hate the character, which a lot of Will Smith's characters as of late I haven't been too into. I just see Will Smith, but I actually didn't hate Deadshot, and the Deadshot shooting scene was actually kind of a cool scene in Suicide Squad amidst a big turd pile of crap movie. I'm with you, Troll. I'm excited to see what James Gunn can do with this. I mean, it's a completely different look and take on this, I'm sure. And I hope he doesn't over Guardians it and doesn't try to do too much Guardians of the Galaxy, because they tried to make Suicide Squad like Guardians of the Galaxy when they did reshoots and they did that brand new trailer. I think they actually used Bohemian Rhapsody for that trailer. I think they did.
Panic at the Disco did a version of Bohemian Rhapsody for the soundtrack.
Yeah, it was. I remember the trailer being good too, but then the movie just the fucking movie stunk.
Did you know Will Smith, what he has coming out? Obviously, Aladdin.
He's got
a Blue Sky Studios picture, which Blue Sky Studios is like the NHL of the major leagues of animated film studios, by the way. No offense to the NHL, but it takes a back seat behind
like my sport bitch.
Pixar and DreamWorks and those other guys.
Isn't it Spies in Disguise, him and Tom Holland?
Oh yeah, the bird one.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Nothing like like some good old Spies in Disguise, right? That's what we all love Will Smith. And then Gemini Man was on my top 10 anticipated of 2019. I'm actually excited about this one. I think this will be a good movie. But I'll mark this. Put it on a shirt. But it's October 4th. And then, of course, Bad Boys for Life. So I get what you're saying. He doesn't need Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad needs him. He can pick and choose what he wants to do.
That's exactly what I mean. It's just like, why was he going to put himself through all that trouble and public scrutiny just for what? Besides more money.
And I feel like he probably has enough.
Just a lad from Liverpool. Will Smith. Somebody complained about us doing Dewey Cox impressions on the pod.
You know whatever, how much he said? Do you know what his net worth is? Do you have a guess?
40 million.
550 million.
300 million.
God damn, I undershot that a lot.
Yeah.
40 million? Shit, dude. 40 million is the net worth of some guy who creates like a clothes tracking app and sells it. You're Will Smith and been doing this for 30 years. I'm surprised it's only 350 million.
Yeah. I thought you'd be closer, about 550.
Do you guys think that Deadshot is a cool character compared to the other characters, especially?
I think all those could be. I think all those Suicide Squad characters suck big ass.
Remember one guy who got his head blown up? He was cool.
Fire guy, the Australian man. I think superheroes you love.
I think Rob. What's his name? His character from Deadpool 2, just the normal guy.
Oh,
Rob Delaney.
Yeah, I think Rob Delaney's character from Deadpool 2 is a lot cooler than any of the Suicide Squad members. Deadshot, okay, a guy who can shoot really well.
He's basically John Wick.
Colonel Rick Flagg.
Oh, hell yeah.
That sounds made up, man. But that's our guy. That's Joel Kinnaman. He's our guy.
He's basically Deadshot. like his powers are essentially the same as Deadshot, just a super soldier. And then you got George Harkness, Captain Boomerang, a thief who uses deadly boomerangs.
Australian man.
And then Killer Croc. Killer Croc. Who could forget Killer Croc?
Me.
It's all right there in the name.
Killer Croc is why they won the Oscar, too. Even though it looked fucking terrible in the movie. It was awful.
You're missing the Joker, too, by the way, and Harley Quinn. Two people with great superpowers of being weird. And who else? The fire guy that turned into like a giant Aztec flame.
Dude, imagine TikTok when this Harley Quinn movie comes out.
Oh my God. Don't even get me started thinking about it. It's already bad enough with Harley Quinn cosplays as is. It's going to be 10 times worse once this drops.
Harley Quinn and the Emancipation of something.
Harlene Quinzel is her real name. It was real convenient.
I mean, the Killer Croc from Suicide Squad could not have looked any fucking worse.
It did look really bad.
It was terrible. What an awful looking character.
Killer Croc.
You want to see something even worse? Look at the action figure. I'm sending you the action figure. I'll try to remember to put the link in the description. Look at this Killer Croc action figure. It's just a guy you see shopping at the outlet malls on the weekend. Look at him.
It's a pretty regular looking dude. Why is he wearing such a nice jacket?
He's got a nice jacket. Just some chinos, you got some sneakers, just that's Killer Croc.
I like how he has hand wraps on, so you can't tell by his hands that he's Killer Croc, even though his face looks like a fucking branch.
Why did 3¾ inch become the standard for action figures?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't bought an action figure in a while, though.
Wow, that makes sense, because you're 26. Yeah,
just saying.
Yeah. Does Funko Pops count? Because I went in Barnes & Noble, and I turned over every Funko Pop they had this weekend looking for a Red Reddington.
Where are they?
Red Reddingtons?
Yes, I don't want to order it online. I want to find it in the store.
I want to find it in the wild.
It's part of the chase. Oh my God, that Killer Croc shirt.
The Killer Croc shirt I just found is...
It is funny, though, because every place... Because I've looked multiple places for Red Reddington. Every place that has Funko Pops, 16% of their Funko Pop collection is Snoke.
That's unsurprising.
That's so true.
Nobody bought that bitches.
Except for me.
That big gold asshole.
Big dead bitch.
Big dead bitch. The Red Reddington Funko is one of the best Funkos I've ever seen, too.
Lizzie.
All right, Suicide Squad. No Will Smith. Not a big deal. I think we're okay with that.
James Gunn. I mean, that's like going from, I don't know. I can't think of an analogy to do it, but what a downgrade that is.
Who's he going to recast as Deadshot? Or are they just not going to include Deadshot?
I think you can't include Deadshot. I don't think Deadshot is a compelling enough character to cast.
Yeah, it's not like we have to get him on screen. Like, just move on to another sharpshooting character.
Just create Pudding Man. a new superhero villain for this movie. Just use your imagination. Yeah, he made a talking raccoon seem really neat in a talking tree teamed up together. He could do really well there. I don't get my comment wrong. I hate the fact that he's not directing Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I'm just gonna come out there from a standpoint of consuming media. This is a bad mismatch of what I want.
Who's gonna play Pudding Man? Because my vote is for Harlan Hill as it stands.
I just can't wait for Pudding Man to turn to Harley Quinn and she goes, "But Pudding Man, if you go in there, you may never come back." And then he looks at her and goes, "That right?
That right? Show me your feety, sweetie."
No, the funniest thing of the weekend I did was a crappy fan art drawing of Crazy Frog with "That right" underneath it.
I didn't even get to see that. When was that?
I sent it. You sent LMFAO, which is the highest irony endorsement somebody can give to something.
It was very funny.
Was this Friday night? Funny.
Yeah.
Okay, that's probably why I don't remember it.
I'm gonna say that.
Humble brag. Last bit of news.
Like in the bad way.
One more bit of news and an ad read. Scooby-Doo news. I don't think we've ever actually talked about Scooby-Doo. This picture's so funny. That might be our next shirt.
Wants to say it twice.
That might be our next shirt.
Jesus Christ. What is wrong with this?
It's so stupid.
Can I tweet that out?
Yeah. Can you just give him a dick and balls too?
No context. It's getting tweeted from our account right now. All right, we got to move on.
Okay.
Will Forte and Gina Rodriguez cast in the Scooby-Doo animated movie. and Matthew Lillard, the guy who played the live-action Shaggy, is not happy about it. He said, well, this – he quote-tweeted an article. He said, "Well, this sucks. What a crappy way to find out. Thanks, Hollywood. You never sent to amaze me."
I think he was joking. I think he was just self-aware.
Are you sure?
I think, because he's been like, I want to say, in the loop with the Shaggy memes that have been coming out like over the last like six-ish, less than that, like 3 months. And I think the fact that he's aware of internet culture to a degree makes me think that he's doing an irony here. I think.
Yeah, such a long time has passed between his Scooby-Doo movies that there's no reasonable way he could expect to even be involved with the reboot of Scooby-Doo. And plus, his whole selling point was that he looked kind of like Shaggy. You can get anyone to do the voice of Shaggy.
Yeah, he doesn't really look that much like Shaggy anymore.
The guy who played Fred is dead now.
Get the fuck out of here.
No, it's Freddie Prinze Jr.
I know, I just made it up. You guys thought about it for a second, though, didn't you?
I did. I was like, "God damn, what?"
That was pretty awesome cast. Freddie Prinze Jr., Linda Lillard. Cardellini. Was it Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Yeah.
And then what's his name?
Wait, you forgot who voiced Scooby though?
Who voiced Scooby?
Kevin Spacey.
What?
No, I'm just fucking with you.
Isla Fisher, Rowan Atkinson were in that movie.
That was when Isla Fisher had her Australian accent on screen.
That's right.
Cameos by Sugar Ray, Pamela Anderson, and Nicholas Hoult.
God, dude, can you imagine Sugar Ray doing a fucking cameo?
17 years ago, we had Steve Jobs, Johnny Cash, and Nicholas Hoult.
Major rip. Sugar Ray.
Okay.
When are we going to get a Marmaduke sequel?
Because
we got an animated Scooby-Doo coming out. Why not just reuse the assets and give us another Marmaduke?
All right, ad read, and we got a couple more pieces of news here before our interview with J.K. Simmons. This episode brought to you in part by SeatGeek. We have the SeatGeek app on our phone, and it's by far the easiest way we found to shop for tickets. It can be anywhere, just a few taps, can instantly find seats. just used SeatGeek recently for an old Broadway show. Saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LIGHTS today. That's promo code LIGHTS for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Shout out to SeatGeek. Thanks for sponsoring the episode. Next bit of news, It 2, Jessica Chastain, not just in Dark Phoenix, also in It 2, the second half of last year's smash hit, or 2 years ago's smash hit, It. This is the second part. This is the part that people really hated from TV. It was very bad. Apparently, it has the bloodiest horror scene in movie history. I bet you're counting down the days to that one, Ken Jack.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself right now.
So much blood. Wait, what a tease.
Has there ever been a movie when where somebody swam in a pool of blood and has just been completely submerged in blood? I'm sure there has. Like in a nightmare sequence or something. Because nothing can be bloodier than somebody submerged in blood and all under bloodshot, right?
Yeah, there had to have been.
Seems like a lie. Seems like some sensational lying going on here to get us excited about the Losers Club. Look at all these losers. Everybody in the Losers Club grew up to be a conventionally attractive adult. That's weird.
What a coincidence. They're all good looking.
They're all good looking people. Now that we have to have a real Hollywood movie with adult actors in it, they're all very conventionally looking, attractive people.
But isn't losers. James McAvoy in this as well?
I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, he is. He's playing Bill.
Oh, yeah. Who could forget?
Eric!
Bill.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten a trailer for this yet. It does come out in September, but I assume we'll get one pretty soon. But apparently has the bloodiest scene in horror history.
They all step out of their car just looking all conventionally attractive and shit, and those kids they threw rocks at in the first one is like, look, it's the Losers Club! Even though I think that kid ended up dying, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where that one's going.
Yeah, all right. Blur.
Next up, a couple more pieces of news. Speaking of It, I think this guy was in It. Finn Wolfhard, he was in It, right? One of the strangest
Yes. Things. Yeah, he was in It.
Badass name.
Him and Stranger Things, too. Have you heard of that one?
Not yet. Him and Carrie Coon in talks to star in Ghostbusters 3. And actually, a clickbait site said, Avengers Infinity War star set to be in Ghostbusters 3.
Because Carrie Coon played that one, like, child of Thanos.
Proxima Nova or whatever. Who actually, yeah. Proxima Midnight, Trill has the Funko Pop. We sent you the Funko Pop for Carrie Coon's character.
Yeah, dude, I threw it away. I know, I threw it in a bag and then gave it to Goodwill with all my other clothes, which, by the way, I don't want to get too conspiracy theorist on here, but Marie Kondo is definitely a psyop created by the fabric industry to get more people to recycle fabric so they can create more recycled fabric shirts.
It's a woke take.
I'm just saying everybody on Facebook was posting what they were donating. Everybody's donating stuff. They're just taking it all in. They're recycling it. Next thing you know, Patagonia is launching their new line of better sweaters, fully recycled fabric. And they're all getting that material on the cheap. We're all donating it. Anyway, Proxima Midnight, somebody was at Goodwill. They saw that shit was a 79 cents. And they're like, oh, it's overpriced.
It's free? I like Carrie Coon. I like Finn Wolfhard. So cool. Ghostbusters 3.
Where's Dan Matarazzo?
I don't want to get – every time we talk about Ghostbusters, we get into the controversy. But this is – having young Ghostbusters is lame to me.
Very lame.
Extremely lame.
So I don't want to – like, this is not part of the controversy of complaining who are the Ghostbusters now. But if you come out and launch the movie – and you're, what, Jason Reitman or whatever, and say you want to create a movie for the Ghostbusters fans and then go ahead and create Ghostbusters Jr., which actually probably was a TV show in the 80s.
it probably aired right after the young Indiana Jones.
I don't want to watch young Ghostbusters. I don't care. I'm old. I'm old as hell, guys. I don't relate to them. If I want to see Ghostbusters, I want to see some grizzled old I want Sam Evans, Sam Elliott to play Ghostbuster.
Ooh.
A gritty Goose Ghostbusters reboot?
Just a freaking, just, what was that movie with all the old people in it?
Wild Hogs.
And you're wild. There's Wild Hogs, but then there's the Bucket List. And then there's
that's
another
two old
one.
People.
There was another one. Oh,
yeah.
Going Out in Style.
Going Out in Style. There's a rash of movies specifically targeted to baby boomers about living it up in your golden years. Why not just get some of those cast members and just have this old ass Ghostbusters movie?
Just also, James Caan and other people.
Also, don't forget Last Vegas.
Ooh, I forgot about that.
Another killer old people
like,
movie.
Imagine the scene. It's Sam Elliott and he's getting his prostate examined, and he's got his little phaser, his proton pack, and he sees Slimer just going around the room, like, ah, ah, and the doctor's fingers up his butthole, and he's trying to tag Slimer with his photon gun. These are free ideas, Hollywood.
That's true. You should start selling these. You're offering up too many free things.
Instead, what we're going to get is, you know what the trailer is going to be like, right? It's going to be, there's going to be a scene in it where Finn Wolfhard fires the gun and then goes, whoa. We're going to get that for sure.
100%.
Like, he's going to discover the power of the Ghostbusters apparatus. Whoa. And then that's going to be a big, big trailer moment.
100%. And then he's going to have his first busting moment.
I can't wait for the first bust.
And see, that's the worst part of it is you can't tackle that subject matter of that song if you have a cast that young. It feels wildly inappropriate.
Teenagers jerk off all the time, dude.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean we have to talk about it on our podcast. That's horrible practice.
Too late now. Cat's out of the bag.
Oh, okay. Next topic.
Speaking of old people, Steven Spielberg doubled down at the end of last week and is going to be proposing a rule change to the Oscars, which would eliminate Netflix or streaming movies' ability to win awards, specifically Best Picture.
I lean away from the mic to breathe in. Boo! Old bastard.
I mean, dude, fuck you.
Like, just like, shut up, man. Shut up. It's fucking, their streaming platforms are making good movies now. Get over it.
What's the argument? He gave his argument in this. He gave his reasoning, right?
Well, this is what he said. So in 2018, Spielberg said, once you commit to a television format, you're a TV movie. You certainly, if it's a good show, deserve an Emmy, but not an Oscar. I don't believe films that are just given the token qualifications in a couple of theaters for less than a week should qualify for the Academy Award nomination. I think this, it's honest to God, one of the worst fucking takes I've ever heard revolving around movies. Like, I truly think it's one of the worst takes. Ava DuVernay had a very good tweet. She said, one of the things I value about Netflix is that it distributes black work far/wide. 190 countries will get When They See Us. It's a movie coming out on Netflix from Ava DuVernay. She said, here's a promo for South Africa. I've had just one film distributed wide internationally. Not Selma, not Wrinkle. It was 13th by Netflix. That matters. So... Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big deal.
Like, accessibility has never hurt anybody's job.
Yeah. I mean, her documentary 13th was, of all of her movies, the most widely released. And now she's another one Netflix widely released. I don't wonder, like, Alfonso Cuarón said it. Nobody would have seen Roma. No theater in the world would have taken Roma and pumped it out wide. And people knew and saw Roma, a black and white movie with subtitles, because it was on Netflix and it was accessible. Like, it's one of the dumbest fucking things I've heard any smart person in movies say. And again, Spielberg's done some incredible things, and it's one of the best at all time. One of the best people in movies, period, not just directors of all time. But, dude, quit yelling at the fucking clouds, man.
I don't think it's dumb. I think it's wrong, but I don't think it's dumb. I understand why he thinks that. He has a very old school mindset, and I think a lot of people in his generation do as well, where things were on TV or things were on movies, and traditionally things on TV had a much lower quality. But with streaming and just the way, I don't know, media has developed and refined itself over the last, hell, I won't even say 20 years, I'll say last 5 years, it's inevitable that, like, what's on streaming needs to be considered as well, regardless of the distribution mechanism.
I don't even like his take. I just went to go look at another Oscar winner that I don't like that would apply to his line of thought. The Artist. The Artist opened up in 600 theaters. And you want to know what its box office was in 2011? I'll give you some that beat it. Hall Pass. Footloose, the 2011 remake.
Hell yeah, with Julianne Hough.
Yep. Tyler Perry's Madea's Big Happy Family. Source Code. I Am Number 4. What else we got here? Happy Feet 2, Dolphin Tale, Justin Bieber, Never Say Never. All these beat this movie in much wider releases. And like this fucking, it opened up in 600 theaters. It just kind of nullifies his argument of saying like, oh, if you're not releasing in wide, like if you're putting in like a less accessible format and like putting it out in wide theaters, then like that's why you deserve to be in the Oscars. Like, why is that the case? Why can't you release a great movie on streaming instead of a shitty movie and put it up in the box office? Why does it make a difference to him?
Because I think there's this Hollywood ideal of movie making and what movie making should be. And part of that's dealing with the distributor and putting it up on a screen and having a very wide distribution. And that's not the way things are going to go. Well, I mean, it's just like by and large, I mean, they will go that way, but there will be things that come on streaming and will be on those platforms, like Roma, for example.
It's going to come to a head, because is he going to go toe-to-toe with Scorsese if The Irishman is up for any Oscars? Because it's going to get a theatrical release like Roma, but it's mostly for streaming. Will he go toe-to-toe with Scorsese?
The olds are 100% going to rally behind Scorsese.
I mean, I would too. I we'll see. It's going to be an interesting battle. I kind of actually hope the battle goes all the way down till the fall, because those two going up against each other, arguing for which other point. Obviously, it has to be good too. If The Irishman's not good, no one's going to care. But it's not like this is the last time a streaming movie is going to get praise like Roma did.
No, it's only going to turn more towards streaming. I don't think streaming is going to be the de facto platform of movie releases anytime soon. Okay. But I do think there will be more and more prestige movies. Mudbound was the first one I really remember being honest to God, actually great movie that was put on streaming. And then of course you had Roma, and I think that's just going to continue like that. And you need to change that rule, but it's just I still think most of the industry is going to continue the same way it's been done. And these are like the exception rather than the majority of cases. And it just seems such a weird point to have for something that's going to be like, you know, at best one of eight movies nominated for Best Picture per year. Exactly. At best. Because it probably won't happen again next year. Probably won't happen again the year after that. But I don't think you'll ever have a situation where you got six movies on Netflix that are contending to be Best Picture.
Exactly. And it's just them shitting their pants over not having to go through that process of dealing with all the bullshit that comes with putting in a wide release. And it's just like that. It's like you said, Jeff, like they in Quran really did say it best. Like it's nobody was going to publish a movie like that. I've used this analogy a few times, and watching Roma, I think, is like watching a master chef just prepare a beautiful meal that you just don't enjoy, like prepare a souffle. Like I just don't eat souffle, but I still appreciate the amount of effort and like the art and the just mastercraft artsmanship behind what he did. And like, that's what Roma was. It's a beautiful work of art. And like, I don't know why Spielberg thinks just because he went to a platform that was going to distribute his movie that makes it not worthy of an Oscar. That's just dumb.
This reminds me of like a situation where you say something stupid and then the best opportunity in the world presents itself for you to do said stupid thing. And you either have to turn it down and look like a complete fucking moron, or you have to swallow your pride and just do it. And he's gonna be faced with that at some point. He just is. Like, there's no two ways about it. Whether it's a billion-dollar contract offer from Netflix or like the greatest project he's ever wanted to do is offered up only streaming. Like, he's gonna be faced with that at some point, and I'm curious when and if he'll break.
Ready Player Two only goes to Hulu.
Also, just we need to state this: Spielberg's the genius.
We're not saying
we know more than him, but as people who are in the general movie going audience and the way we look at movies, we have a different take as consumers. And I think for us to look at something like we're not as strict on the bucketing of like what movie should be considered than he is, because I don't think we just care. We don't care.
It also goes down to just honestly the fact that like it's inclusion, and it's not. I'm not even saying like gender, race, like literally anybody, like people who can't. I mean, he's worth $4 billion. Like he can afford to do whatever the fuck he wants. You know, these platforms allow other movie makers to make movies and have different distributions and do other things. I mean, I don't think he's mean spirited in that sense. Like, I don't think he's a maliciously bad person. And I think you're right, Troy. Maybe his thought isn't dumb. I think it's wrong, but also there is a superiority complex to it. I feel like in a small sense of it, because again, he's very rich. He has a lot of money and he has like tug at the string control over Hollywood. So not everyone has that. I would imagine people like Alfonso Cuarón or Ava DuVernay, when she tweeted, they're going to make that point, and this eventually gets shut down. But again, I do think whenever the Scorsese thing comes into play here, if The Irishman is good, that's where we're really going to see this pop off.
It just kind of reminds me of, you know, athletes sometimes where like they talk about, you know, like athletes these days are coddled because they get paid $40 million a year rather than getting paid like $50 a game. And like part of it's like I agree with it, but the other part of me is like the landscape has shifted so much that it's like not even the right comparison. So this is a lazy analogy, but I just think that this is the way things are going. This is the way media distribution is going to happen. It's going to happen more and more via these platforms, and you either embrace it or you get left outside of it.
Yeah, it's a certainly interesting argument. I will say that, and it's definitely something worth having. I'm glad that someone's having that discussion, but it's always tough when it comes from somebody who does have a lot of control, because I would hate to see this happen. I think it'd be horseshit, or as I tweeted, it's just bullshit. So we'll see. This is very far from over at this point, at least in the context of this year. A couple more pieces of news.
Yeah, him and Scorsese are going to do a Hell in a Cell match.
They are. Yeah.
Just, yeah. Steven Spielberg getting choke slammed into the Spanish announcer's table off the top of the cell.
It's Steiner.
My God! They killed him. They killed him. They broke him in half.
So, two more quick things, and then my favorite piece of news, and then our interview. Edge of Tomorrow 2 officially happening. Excuse me. That's Live, Die, Repeat, for those who know it by another title. That's the Emily Blunt, Tom Cruise movie. That's awesome. Fantastic movie. Glad it's getting a sequel. So much more to explore there, I feel like.
Live, Die, Repeat's a better title, in my opinion.
I agree.
Yep.
I think it fits. It's not as serious, and so I think it fits in the tone of the movie better, because that movie was somewhat tongue-in-cheek at points.
Yeah, that's true.
Edge of Tomorrow sounds like the English like translation of an anime show or something. I like Live, Die, Repeat, like you said. It's way more in line with the theme of the movie.
So that's good. Very excited about that. Sandlot, a sequel with the original cast, but it's coming to TV. Oh. And it's going to be set in 1980.
On that note, I'm going to get a seltzer.
It's set in 1984 with the parents. They're now parents, and they have kids who now also like baseball.
God, imagine that.
It's like,
that's crazy.
Okay.
It's like, how are they going to like work in the fact that Benny the Jet Rodriguez's kids are like super rich? And
that's true. Doesn't live there anymore.
No, he definitely doesn't live in that neighborhood. He's in the mansion neighborhood, and everyone else probably is doing pretty okay. But like, you know, Benny the Jet Rodriguez's kids, they have a different lifestyle. How are they going to work that one in?
It's just like the premise is, it's like the first Sandlot, but new kids like baseball. That's basically, I mean, that's it. That's the premise. It's a different group of kids who like baseball, and now they're going to reference another player instead of Babe Ruth. I don't know.
Is it going to be the same neighborhood? It's got to be, though, because you got to have James Earl Jones in it.
Yeah, or at least the reference.
I know, if it's a TV movie, so I don't know.
It's like, a TV movie, so the Sandlot's going to be like, they have to fundraise or else it's going to be turned into a Starbucks or something.
No, this is the 80s, so it would be
it's the 80s?
Okay. Yeah, it'd be a Blockbuster Video.
Fuddruckers.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
It's going to turn into just a mall where Tiffany performs.
It will be. It would be a strip mall. A strip mall, yes, with a video store in it, guys.
What was popular in the 80s? Shit, I don't even know. A Western Sizzler? I'm trying to think. Just bouncing ideas off of you guys. I hate this because we've talked about this before. I like The Sandlot, but the love The Sandlot gets is unbelievable. Watch another fucking movie, guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one up there for me with Space Jam. And like, Sandlot's a good movie, but let's fucking relax too at the same time. Like,
they should do
just a movie about kids liking baseball. Like, it doesn't transcend fucking time.
They should do one in the this decade, and it's The Sandlot, right? But the kids all suck at baseball because they're playing baseball in a sandlot. And yeah, the teams they're playing against are like, you know, the Easton Bulldog Traveling Baseball Club, where like they're going down to Tampa to play in tournaments every 2 weeks, and they just get fucking smoked.
Oh man, I have an idea that would make people really mad, and it's remake The Sandlot, except they're all like an esports team. Imagine how furious people would get at that.
They're playing Overwatch.
Yes, Ham Porter is like he's like, guys, who are you maining this time? Like, people will be so pissed off. I want to be Winston.
They should remake The Sandlot, but it's airsoft guns.
Oh, that's even better. Or like a paintball team. No, airsoft's way better than paintball in this scenario. Mm. Oh, that would fucking rule. I'm in on that. I'm in. Sign me up.
I just want a movie to talk about how competitive kids' athletics are these days, because it's ridiculous. Folks, been checking it out now that I'm a dad. Orange Julius, they bulldoze it, and it's an Orange Julius.
Limited to Sharper Image.
It's a pet rock store.
Miller's Outpost, KB Toys, Imaginarium, Fashion Bug.
Do you guys remember when pet stores used to be in malls?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are still pet stores in malls?
There was one in my local mall.
I just thought they all got, people turned against them really quickly once they realized how those animals were generally sourced.
Dude, fucking, there's this puppy store, I want to say, on my walk home from my old job.
Puppy store? A pet store?
No, because it was only puppies. And like, there are all of these puppies in like the window display, essentially. They were on like a pen. And then like, I always like would take pictures of them because they're really cute. And then like, they ended up getting outed as like treating the dogs terribly. And like, PETA was there throwing paint on their store. They had to close it down.
But I think a lot of those places were part of a mill network.
Exactly.
And I mean, those definitely still do exist, but they just don't have fronts right next to Suncoast Video. also big RIP. hit very hard. We talk about digital streaming. Hit very hard by that. Yes. If they would have survived just a few more years, they could have started the Funko Pop thing, which is suddenly what GameStop has turned into.
That's what FYE does.
Mm. Suncoast was the best place to get anime, Ken Jack.
I've never even seen that store in my life.
It would have seemed as though there are still Suncoast Videos operating.
I bet at FYE once, but it was a closing down sale, and I got a poster of Indiana Jones, which I pretty sure threw
FYE, up. All of their revenue in the last 2 years has come from Funko Pops and fidget spinners.
Apropos of nothing, did you see that Fortnite festival that happened in the UK that wasn't even licensed by Fortnite and apparently was just a huge disaster? The events, they had a bunch of PCs where they were charging people $20 to play Fortnite, a game that is notoriously a free-to-play game. And they, you know, they had Fortnite dance competitions, because those are the really only two things you can do. And I think Epic is suing them now. Good. for misappropriation of their license, which I say, get them, Kings.
Good for them. But yeah, this Sandlot sequel bores me. But you know what? Space Jam 2, more acceptable sequel in my eyes. There's more to explore with the Looney Tunes and basketball aliens, where the Sandlot 2, it's just kids just like baseball again, guys.
Space Jam 2 is just somewhat like depressingly logical that it would happen. We all thought it was going to happen for the last 10 years, and it's happening. And I'm interested in it because it's, you know, again, a perverse interest in it, just to see how it turns out. But something like Sandlot 2, like I said, I like the original Sandlot, but it's an overrated movie. It's not that great of a movie. I don't really care about their kids in the 80s playing baseball in a Sandlot. Find a new damn place to play baseball, kids. This is where the Orange Julius, this is where the Rax is going in.
Quick ASMR segment, my fidget spinner. Can you hear it?
Hello.
That sounds nice. It's delightful. I'm doing a fidget spinner tomorrow at work. I'm bringing them back.
Look at that
Bring that in tomorrow. All right. Speaking of old things, I promise this is the last piece of news. You remember Viewmaster?
Nope. Mm-hmm. There's a Viewmaster movie coming, right?
That's what there is. Viewmaster was the thing that you would put in front of your eyes, like looking into like a...
Slides. It was slides.
Oh,
slides.
Oh yeah.
You put the wheel slide in there and you pull the lever and it goes to the next slide. There is a Viewmaster movie coming out.
It's basically just Ready Player One.
Yeah.
Viewmaster was the shittiest Google Images ever.
It really was. That was depressing.
Very limited in terms of what you could view on the Viewmaster. Now you can see anything you want. So I don't know how kids are going to receive this.
Look, I'm just going to say what we're all thinking. Was there ever any pornographic Viewmaster material?
I'm sure there was, man.
Viewmaster porn.
There's OG VR porn. The VM porn.
The FBI is monitoring Jeff's searches right now. It's like, we got him.
Would you fuck me?
Lifelike natural color pinups. Beauty comes alive when you see in 3D. Yeah, there's Viewmaster porn, all right.
When I was at the gym, my new brand I was thinking of was Buffalo Bill, but he was a cuck. And so his line was, would you cuck me? I cuck you. And the other guy's like, yeah, that's why I'm here. Fuck me hard. I'm like, okay, that's kind of creepy, but where's your wife?
Where's the damn wife at?
Here's the ad. Here's the sales pitch on this Viewmaster porn. Breathtaking, beautiful models that you can almost reach in and hold in your arms. Bro, that's very sad. Brought to you by the medium of color, three-dimensional photography. 7 pairs of different poses in each reel at an amazing cost of $1.50 per reel. Which back in those days, I mean, that's like fucking $800.
Well, yeah, and you had to get it shipped. And that's how they always got you with the shipping and handling.
Jeez.
Fucking wow. Columbia House, man.
Crazy, though. Viewmaster movie. All right. Well, that's news. Long news. We got a lot of news. Only one more thing. J.K. Simmons, Academy Award winner. We sat down with him. But before that, this episode brought to you in part by guess who? Guess who, guys? Guess who?
Who's our white whale advertiser? Schweppes.
Peter Millar. Peter Millar was founded in 2001 with a single cashmere sweater and has grown into a premium American lifestyle brand. I apparently owned a Peter Millar down vest. Had no idea. We posted our picture with J.K. Simmons. Everyone, including Trill, was like, that's a great Peter Millar. And I thought it was like a joke because we just always advertise Peter Millar. And sure enough, like later on that night, I was like, that's interesting. I wonder who makes this down vest. And I opened up the inside and it was Peter Millar. It's one of the best things I own. Peter Millar partners with the most skilled craftsmen and artisans in the world, never overlooking any detail, no matter how small. Quality buttons, zippers, much more. Peter Millar is the best. We say that quite often. Comfort, quality, style, and versatility. No matter where you go. For an interview with J.K. Simmons, being at work, it doesn't matter. Peter Millar is quality. Head over to petermillar.com/lights today and experience the quality for yourself. Pick up a few of... our favorite stuff there, including the performance shirts. Those performance sports shirts are great. Offered in a multitude of colors and patterns, perfect for the office of the weekend. While you're there, make sure to check out some of our favorite styles. Use our link and you'll receive complimentary free shipping and a free hat. That's petermillar.com/lights, petermillar.com/lights. Academy Award winner, J.K. Simmons. Ken Jack and I talked to him. Let's hear it.
All right, Lights, Camera, Barstool interview. We haven't a chance to say this. We have Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons here, coming right off the Oscars too, which we'll talk about. I have a pretty good Oscars question for you. All right. But you're in
pretty
here.
Pretty good. Is that where the bar is set here? Pretty good.
It's excellent.
Yes, okay, definitely good, excellent.
It's right. Excellent. You're in here. You're doing your press for movie. I'm Not Here, which is coming out March 8th.
March 8th in what I keep hearing people call New York and select cities.
Mm. Yes, yes.
But it's coming out in, it's coming out in like 25 cities, you know, New York, Chicago, L.A., the big towns and some smaller towns. And anybody that's not in one of the towns where it's coming out can get it on video on demand the same day.
Cool.
Which is great.
Yeah.
If you're not in Gary, Indiana, you can always just go rent it on.
I think we might be playing Peoria. I'm not sure, but, you know.
The synopsis, and please correct me if there's a better way to describe it, but I always like to read.
I might stop you in the middle of it if you start getting into spoiler land. So if people hear like a quick smack,
okay, then yeah, you're allowed to. Yeah,
we'll know what happened.
Guests are allowed to hit me one time per episode. That's okay. Fine. Yeah. Cool. As the power is shut off and the fridge runs empty, an aging and debilitated man contemplates a life full of loss and mistakes. As he relives his significant memories, he hopes to move past the pain and forgive himself.
Well, that's a pretty artfully written synopsis.
Very artfully written.
Yeah, and it doesn't sort of, you know, give away a lot of what happens in the movie. There's a little trailer. There are a couple trailers online, mm-hmm. a short one and a longer one, and I hate trailers in general.
Ooh.
Always hate trailers. But I love our trailers because they give you a sort of sense of the movie and show you, you know, all the great actors that we have in the film, but they don't, you know, like tell you, oh, here's the entire story of the film, so you don't have to bother going to see it, you know.
Now, this is an interesting role for you for a couple reasons, but we'll get to the first part. You do not have lines.
Yeah. No, I do not. And that sort of evolved during the writing of the piece. It was written and co-written by my wife, Michelle Schumacher, with her writing partner, Tony Cummings, and then she also directed and edited the movie. As it evolved, they decided that the level of isolation that this guy has sort of self-imposed ultimately, you know, puts him in a position where he ain't got nobody to talk to.
I saw you do an interview, I believe, with Seth Meyers. You were talking about it this week, and I think he was joking, like, is it harder or easier? I think you joked saying it's easy, you got no lines. But is there you have to channel a different side to not speak, or is it really just an easier thing?
No, it was, obviously on one level, you're not sitting up in bed learning lines for the next day. But, in terms of being able to sort of express where this guy is, it was a little bit of a challenge in that way. I've used the metaphor of, you know, it's like a boxer training with one hand tied behind his back. You know, you just use your other tools. And really, you know, the other tools were not even my tools. It was the writer or director tools to, you know, to contextualize everything so that we would see through flashbacks or this or mm-hmm. that, you know, what I was going through that I would be emotionally impacted by.
And you mentioned that your wife did direct this film. That was the other thing that makes it interesting. Was there any reservation, or is it daunting maybe? You know, you got to step up. It's the most important person
well,
in your life.
Yeah. No, there is that aspect of it, too, that most people don't mention. It's like, what was the vibe like? What was the – yeah, but I guess – I think that's the first time anybody's phrased it that way. I guess there was a little bit of an aspect of it being daunting because, you always want to do your job and do your best as an actor, but, you know, you certainly don't want to disappoint, you know, this particular writer, director,
yes.
You know, because, like you said, it's the most important person on the planet to me. And at the same time, you know, the one that I trust implicitly too, which was important in this kind of a role, particularly where I'm, you know, pretty, just butt naked. I mean, you know, emotionally and figuratively and literally, yeah.
Maybe this no speaking role you should try out for the next A Quiet Place movie with Emily Blunt and John Krasinski.
There you go. There, yeah,
another movie directed sequel. By husband and wife.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
Yeah. A lot of connections. Absolutely. There. So maybe, you'd be the best player in that universe there.
We'll get no with them, figuratively speaking. Yeah.
For anyone listening, I like doing this too. Why should someone go see this movie in your eyes, through your eyes as the actor, and obviously with a pretty good connection to who may help make the movie?
As we've screened this for, at festivals, and we had a screening yesterday with the National Board of Review here in New York, it's a movie that is really impactful in a variety of ways. To a variety of people, it's a smart somebody was doing a much better job of describing it than I am, and said that, you know, it's not esoteric, you know, it's not one of those it's artsy fartsy little indie film that's only for people who, you know French cinema inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is an indie film in every sense of the word, but it really has something to say to pretty much anybody, because at the end of the day, it's about love and it's about family and it's about a sort of a, as your synopsis said, something a search for a for redemption and forgiveness.
And obviously not just you in the movie either. Let's make that clear.
A great cast. And it's also, a lot of it is fairly somber, and certainly my part of it is. But really the film is kind of in three parts that are then interspliced. The same character is my age, and then he's a 20-something played by Sebastian Stan, and then he's a 5-year-old played by the actor who's really blown up since we shot the movie, Ian Armitage, who's young Sheldon on TV Land now, probably the best known actor in the entire film at this point, and a great cast, Mandy Moore and Max Greenfield, David Koechner, Micah Monroe, my pal Harold Perrineau did us a little cameo. It's a beautiful multi-generational cast.
I want to ask you an Oscar question. We're obviously on the heels of it last week. Not as much about what you won for, but about the speeches. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about speeches in the last couple months, and they want to cut back, all that. Your speech was great. You ended it with the whole thing about, call your parents, call your mom, call your dad. And you also won many times before that year, too. So it's not like, I had my one shot at my speech. What's it like for speech preparation?
Yeah. In a way, I'm the perfect guy to ask, and in a way, I'm the absolute wrong guy to ask, because I never wrote a speech for any of those. And that whole award season, like you said, it was just like a snowball rolling downhill for me in Whiplash. And all the people that I know in the business who really, have their ear to the ground about awards and all that stuff kept telling me it's pretty much a done deal. You know, you're going to get all the trophies. So I just tried to, every time, whether it was the BAFTAs or the SAG Awards or the Golden Globe or whatever, the New York Film Critics, I just went up on stage with a general idea of what I wanted to talk about that was, specific to that. Like at the SAG Awards, I talked about supporting actors and, hey, we're all supporting actors. Whether you're the lead or you have one line, we're all there supporting the story, the movie, we're all in the same boat together. It's a team sport, at the Oscars, all I knew, without sort of word for word writing a speech was that I wanted to just go up there and take my 45 seconds to talk about what's most important to me, which is family, my wife, my kids, my folks. And, I figured this, I'm never going to be in front of a bigger audience,
Yeah.
And that was what was important to me. Again, a couple of my buddies, guys that I've known, for 40 years, were like, having this conversation just between them that I wasn't a part of before the Oscars, and they basically called it. They were like, "Oh, we know what this dude talked about." he's not gonna thank his agent. He's not gonna think, "Yeah, by the way, Stephen Hirsch, thank you."
Decent role.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah. He's gonna talk about the fam.
The thing you mentioned too is that people told you were gonna win, and not exactly like you, because you swept, I think, for the most part, everything. Where Glenn Close had this happen last week, where she didn't sweep everything. She did lose the BAFTAs to Olivia Colman, but people were still like, "The streak ends tonight. Streak ends." Were there any nerves for you still? You're like, I guess you never know.
No, yeah, I absolutely. And the nerves were kind of because of that, because everyone had told me, "Dude, I mean, they're laying late odds in Vegas, and you're like a 900-1." It was really just a relief when they said my name, because I thought, what if they say somebody else? I mean, I'm like a schmuck. I'm like the biggest favorite ever that somehow stumbled out of this. Obviously not that you, it's not, we're not playing sports. It's not.
You're in a big gambling office.
In that. Yeah. Yeah. But no, it was really, and I was very, very glad that, that's, I think, literally the first award they hand out at the Oscars, or maybe the second, which happens early in the show. So I wasn't sitting there the whole time thinking, how big a schmuck am I if they say somebody else's name and the camera's on me and I'm trying not to act surprised,
So we got to talk a little bit about Spider-Man. You play J. Jonah Jameson,
in a franchise that essentially helped kick off all of comic book movie franchises, which is something we have to thank you for because that's some of our biggest core audience. They love comic book movies.
We do a little bit.
Yeah, we like them. We're in between the comic book movies. So the role of Jonah Jameson is so quick-witted. Was any of that ad-libbed for you?
Yeah, it was. You know, I had lunch with Sam Raimi last week just randomly, just, you know, because he's one of my favorite humans on the planet. And we were talking about that. We were talking about what fun. And I had done his two previous films before the first Spider-Man movie. One of my first decent roles in a movie was For Love of the Game. And that was, you know, where we met and where our relationship began and where our sort of mutual trust began. And because I know baseball and I'm kind of a baseball guy, and I didn't even know this, but Sam's from Detroit. I'm from Detroit. You know, we're both Tigers fans, and I'm living out my boyhood dream. Well, almost. I'm playing the manager at the time. Yeah. I would have rather been playing the center fielder, but, you know, despite the fact that Costner is, I think, a week younger than I am. You know, we're basically the same age, and he gets to play a ball player, and I'm bald, so I play the manager. But, yeah, dream come true. And on starting with that film, I mean, all those scenes in the dugout and the, you know, I mean, it was beautifully scripted movie. It's a beautiful novella that it's based on, and the script was wonderful. But Sam just let us play, you know, and especially the stuff, you know, in the dugout watching the game and stuff. I was surrounded by ex-big leaguers like Jim Colborn, you know, a 20-game winner who's you know, still a pal of mine. And, you know, most of the players on the team were, you know, either minor league players or you know, ex-big league. Anyway, so it was like a very easy environment for a bunch of guys to sit around and improvise about baseball, because that was their world. And that continued into the next movie I did with him called The Gift, where we had a lot of improvising. I played this redneck sheriff, and a lot of the guys I was working with were, you know, real guys from the sheriff's department in that county in rural Georgia. And he just really trusted us to improvise. So when it came to Spider-Man, especially because, you know, those scenes in the Daily Bugle office were, you know, to an extent kind of the comic relief. And as Sam and I talked about it going into it, after the, you know, I went and auditioned and the studio and the, you know, producers signed off on this relatively unknown guy, you know, playing this part. You know, we kind of developed it together, Sam and I and his brother Ted and the other actors. You know, again, with the script that was already there, that was, you know, really solid and good on paper, we came up with ideas, you know, at both ahead of time and then on the day as well. There was a really fun, freeing amount of improvisation. And then that continued, you know, especially, I think, in Spider-Man 2. Which, for my money, I mean, I'm sure you guys have this debate. If the crowd here is a comic book movie crowd, you know, I mean, you know, rank the Spider-Man movies in order of which is the best. I mean, for me, number two is the best. Number one was very good, a close second, and number three, you know, maybe not so much. And I think that's for a variety of reasons, including, you know, mostly. For my money, people not trusting Sam Raimi enough, you know, to make his own movie. That's probably the exact wrong, politically incorrect thing to say, but
that's who knows.
I would assume that would be the reason.
If you were ever asked, because we loved your performance as J. Jonah Jameson, if you were asked to reprise the role in the MCU for the Tom Holland Spider-Man, would you want to?
I would always be open to. Well, you know, anything. Look, I'm an actor. I mean, we're always looking for work. But yeah, I mean, I have enormous affection for what we did with Sam Raimi in those first three movies, and with, you know, Toby and everybody and Elizabeth Banks, for crying out loud. Yeah. It was just like, oh, she's funny. You know, nobody ever heard of her, and she's really fun to improvise with. You know, yeah. I mean, having said that, you know, I'm a fan of what Tom Holland has been doing, and I would definitely not close the door if somebody were knocking on it.
We need people to knock.
Please knock.
And again, you mentioned something that rolls into what I want to talk about next. You mentioned whether it's politically correct or not. There are people, obviously studios and like heads of things, they talk about what kind of movie they want, and it's not always the director or the people making the movie getting what they want on the screen. And I know some of your stuff was cut out of Justice League, obviously, and there was a lot of tinkering with that movie. And I've seen some interviews where you've talked about it, and you definitely would go back, I believe you said, if asked. Did that happen because of pressure as well? And do you think that it happening in 2017 compared to when Spider-Man first came out in the early 2000s, that pressure from fan bases and expectations for comic books is what might have hurt that?
Yeah, well, I think that certainly has grown exponentially. I mean, as you said, you know, Sam was really breaking ground with the Spider-Man, not just Sam, but, you know, the whole Marvel, you know, studios and everybody involved. And the pressure has become more and more and more enormous. And you know, there were a lot of reasons for the way the Justice League movie developed, and, you know, including personal tragedy and things that are a lot more important than movies. I think to most people's thinking, it was, you know, there was disappointment about the way that movie ended up and the way it was received, and again, you know, as far as I'm concerned, optimism for the future. I mean, I barely dipped my toe in the waters of the DC universe and playing Commissioner Gordon, and you know, hey, I'm not going to close that door either. If they come knocking on both doors, you know, then I'll do both.
Why not?
Definitely do both.
Why couldn't I?
I don't want to have to talk about the picture. I feel like you get asked in every interview when you were working out and looked incredibly ripped and jacked. But I'll ask, were the scenes cut? Was it you beating up Steppenwolf? Were you fighting villains?
No.
Okay.
There was all that conjecture after. Actually, the movie that we're here talking about now, I'm Not Here, which my wife directed, my wife has a name, by the way, Michelle Schumacher.
Yes.
Yeah. I can't keep.
You said it in the beginning.
No, I know. I keep saying my wife, like, you know.
Borat voice.
For this film, I'm Not Here, I lost a lot of weight because she and I talked about this character as being, you know, kind of at the end of his rope and not taking care of himself, and debated whether I should kind of get, you know, bloated and doughy, or whether I should get emaciated, and it seemed both healthier and kind of sexier, frankly, to get emaciated. So I did that, you know, in a healthy way, and got scrawny, and, you know, grew out the beard and everything, and then yeah, it was about a month later. I was working out in the gym with my pal Aaron Williamson, and basically just, you know, trying to build back up after having really cut weight. And so, you know, I was kind of at that perfect spot where I, you know, I had gotten super lean, and then I was putting back on some pounds, and we'd just done, you know, several sets, and I was all as pumped up as a guy my age gets. And Aaron said, "Hey, you mind if I take some pictures?" And I said, "Sure." And he threw them up on Instagram, which I didn't even know what it was. And then, yeah, but like months went by, and there was nothing. And then all of a sudden, it just exploded and blew up. And my friend's son, who was like, I don't know, this is like 3 years ago, I think, when that that picture came out. But my friend's son referred to me as Shredded Santa, which is my new
nickname.
Great
moniker.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
There's obviously a lot of
movies. By the way, the guns are still here. They're just holstered. I mean,
you're trying not to embarrass us.
Yeah.
For those listening, he's got a sweater in
hand.
Yeah. I would love, I could talk hours about Damien Chazelle and Whiplash and La La Land, but I want to get to one quick movie first. I Love You, Man.
Oh, dude.
You is the greatest name ever spoken in movie history, Hank Mardukas.
Absolutely it is.
100%.
We had – that is the set that I have had the most laughs on of any movie I've ever done, between John Hamburg, the director, and, you know, Jason and Paul and Andy Samberg. I mean, you know, it was such a great, great group of just hilarious people. I mean, there were many, many times where John Hamburg, we called him John C. Hamburg. The C is for coverage. because he made us crazy every once in a while. We're like, oh, come on, really? We need that angle? But there were many times when we'd hear this plaintive cry from Video Village, you know, where the director and producers and everybody is saying, guys, please, can we just get one without you guys cracking up? Come on.
Was that line written, or was that something that just came up with on like the day of the shoot or something? It's so funny.
Oh, the Hank Mardukas?
Yeah.
No, that was John Hamburg all the way. Yeah, that was yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, was there a reason why? Just popped in his head. I mean, Mardukas. We make stupid
you know
funny
what?
Names.
Yeah, no, I never, because a lot of times, I mean, I'll throw names into things that are like my Uncle Del or my friend Bill Fagerbakke, who's also a well-known actor. But like when you're doing a movie in Minnesota, it's like, how can you not call somebody Fagerbakke, you know? So I often try to put in, you know, my cousin's name or whatever it is. So I don't know what the relationship is between John C. Hamburg and Hank Mardukas. We'll have to ask him.
Will forever be my fantasy football team name.
Yes.
It's always going to be Hank Mardukas. Will always be. We want to play a little quick game with you here. Hypothetical. I want you to pick your dream genre, director, co-star. And you can pick someone you've worked with before, but a movie in your head you can make. It's on the spot, too. So.
Dream genre, director, co-star. Well, since I'm in, you know, comic nerd land, I guess I guess my dream genre would be, because honestly, disclaimer, I mean, I almost always look at things without genre in mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only genre that I kind of really am never interested in, just personally, just my own thing, is horror. Or like,
all right, we're gonna cross off.
You're my new favorite.
We're gonna cross off A Quiet Place too.
My new favorite guest.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, it's just not. Whatever. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
As an audience or as an actor. But to respond directly, I guess the dream genre would be comic book movie. The dream director, I've already worked with him 5 times and would love to work with him again. It's going to be Sam Raimi. I mean, I know there are lots of really, really great directors out there. Doing these movies now, but yeah, the dream co-star.
I guess you're okay, villain in this case, since it's comics. You're the hero, or you can be the villain.
Am I the hero? If I'm the villain, so. Here's another a dream co-star that I just worked with this fall. That was one of my very favorite guys that I ever worked with. It's Hugh Jackman.
Ooh. That's a great movie already.
Ooh,
I'm so in this movie.
I mean, either one of us could. I guess he's the hero probably, and I'm the villain. But we could flip it on its head.
Ooh, maybe you're the new Professor X and he stays Wolverine?
Yeah, that's true. You could go Professor X.
No, these are new characters.
Okay, brand new.
It's not. We're not reprising anything.
Okay.
All right. We did have one last thing we wanted to do with you. And we did a little bit of a write-up for J. Jonah Jameson. Let's say he exists now in the MCU, post-Thanos Snap Universe. I don't know if this is going to be too small of a font for you to read over here. Is this too small?
I got it.
Okay, so I'll start it off for you. So let me set the scene for you. Thanos has completed his mission to destroy half of all life in the universe. The Daily Bugle is mostly empty, except for J. Jonah Jameson conducting a staff meeting.
I'm not sure if there are any words we can print that will help people move on from this unspeakable tragedy. So how about we sell some damn newspapers? First headline, New York City collecting dust. Nobody? No takers? Okay, fine. Let's just play the hits. Somebody get Parker in here to get some pictures of that chump Spider-Man's ashes. Headline, Spider-Man is a dumb idiot who's dead as hell.
Sir, Peter Parker died in the snap.
Died, huh? Parker, I don't know if you're looking down on us right now, but you're fired.
Yeah, that was great.
Yes, that was incredible.
That is some lovely,
that was incredible.
Lovely comic book writing.
If you don't get a knock on your door for that,
right?
Nothing
will. Come on!
Oh, my goodness. Well, we have one more.
I apologize, by the way, for blowing people's ears off.
No, that's fine. That's good.
I don't mean you. I mean people who might actually listen to this foolishness.
We do have one last question. This is your honest opinion. Who is the better J.K., you or J.K. Rowling?
That's apples and oranges, dude. I mean, let me just say this though: if you go on IMDb and you type in J.K., who's going to come up first? I don't mean to throw down, but
roasted. I love that.
It ain't perfect. Alphabetical. Let me put it that way.
Well, let me squeeze this one more into because we have like another.
Having
minute.
Said that, I'm sorry.
Oh, of course.
I would gladly trade bank accounts.
Me too, actually, if you're listening.
I think anyone not named probably like Bezos Buffett would probably
yes.
trade bank accounts.
Right, yeah.
We have like another minute, so I just want to ask Damien Chazelle, was there a point during Whiplash, La La Land, two of our favorite movies ever, was there a point during Whiplash or when you first met him where you said, this guy, might be a genius. This guy might be an unbelievable director.
Well, when I first read both the short film, which we did of Whiplash a year and a half before the feature, when I first read both those scripts, which I got in the same email from Jason Reitman, I knew this guy was a genius writer. And as we were doing the short, which Johnny Simmons played the drummer, no relation, great guy, great actor, I began to see that this guy had the potential to be a great director, but he was just kind of nervous and intimidated by being in L.A. and, you know, making a movie with established blah, 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 whatever. And a year and a half later, when we were day one of shooting the feature, I was like, oh, yeah, he's grown up and he's full on genius and you know, knows exactly what he's doing. And he's going to be making brilliant movies for the next 50 whatever years.
Well, they're great roles. Great. Even though you did, again, you did fire Ryan Gosling. That's like sacrilegious with our pod, but... You know what?
Am I allowed to say what I yes. wanted to yeah, say? Yes. F*** Ryan Gosling. By the way, first man. I mean, what the hell? Well, you know, speaking of Oscars and blah 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 blah, that's a beautiful movie.
Yeah, it was gorgeous.
I mean, that's some Damien Chazelle and Ryan Gosling, you know, at the tops of their game.
One of the most unbelievable IMAX experiences when they step out of the lander.
I didn't see it in IMAX.
You're just like. You're like, what?
No, such a beautifully shot thing. Well, yeah, beautiful movie.
Damien's a good friend. Have him wheel an IMAX to your house. And, yes. And you can watch that.
Dude, bring it over.
Well, thank you very much. I'm Not Here coming out March 8th. This is airing on the 3rd, so later this week. And you said video on demand in select cities in New York. That's like one of the good perks in New York. We get a lot of movies.
Right.
Where on demand, too, just to clarify that?
Pretty much every VOD platform you can... You can awesome. Find I'm Not Here and, you know, social media. It's I'm Not Here movie.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Thank we you. Had an absolute blast with you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks,
Academy
man.
Award winner, J.K. Simmons.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to J.K. Simmons. That was awesome. The J. Jonah Jameson thing was very cool. He also called Ken Jack a good writer. So get fucked, Trill.
Yep. That was a big get fucked, Trill moment right there.
That right.
Hey, if J.K. Simmons wants to tell me to get fucked, I'll gladly accept it and ask for another.
That was a good spin zone.
He is one of my favorite people in Hollywood, and I am amazed you guys were able to interview him.
I often say it. I say this is for anyone in life with power. When they hit a certain age, like 55, I don't know exactly how old he is, but at that point, after being very successful, there's a fork in the road where people either become narcissistic, egotistical douchebags, or they're like, wow, I really appreciate where I am in life. I'm going to be nice to everybody. And that's J.K. Simmons, just nice fucking guy. He could have sat there for hours and talked about nothing with us. It was great. Really good time. Cool interview. Hope everyone liked it. That's it. That's all we got. That's all we got time for today.
Nick Foles going to sign with the Jaguars. A little breaking news for you.
I like that move.
That is a good move. Good for him.
As the guy who doesn't know much about football, I like it.
You know enough.
I know enough to like it.
You think they'll be good, though? You think they're a good team with the addition of Foles?
No.
That's like the sheer disgust with that question even being raised.
No, yeah. I don't. What a weird team.
I like Nick Foles, though. I wish him well.
Me too. Super Bowl MVP. That was the most unbelievable Super Bowls I've ever watched. Oh, actually, you got to say the Patriots winning.
Yeah, Patriots comeback was... That was
the Atlanta one.
Yeah, that was easily the best one I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, but it's baseball season now, fellas.
Pitchers yeah, like and the Sandlot.
Still, pitchers and still hockey season. Hockey and NBA season.
Pitchers and catchers report in 7 days.
Is that true?
No, I think they've already reported.
Reported like 2 weeks ago.
To say it.
Take your baseball and go watch the fucking Sandlot.
That's going to be my category now. Tomorrow it's going to be baseball. And oh, man, I fucked up that... Oh, I don't remember it now. Is it Pedro Sandoval? Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah. Fuck. I should give you a baseball. I'm going to give Tyler a baseball category tomorrow, actually. That's one of his randoms.
Tyler's pretty damn good at baseball.
Yeah, Tyler does know a lot about sports. That is big. All right. Anything else? You got to go see How to Train Your Dragon 3. That's what we're reviewing this week. We're going to finally release the non-Pixar rankings. We've never talked about, like, Shrek.
Number one, Toy Story.
Iron Giant. Right. Oh.
We're gonna give the baby a chance.
Oh, redemption!
Baby's getting a chance. Hi. Boop. Boop. Can you say something? We're wrapping up the podcast. Did he say Dada?
Come on, chill, baby.
She's frozen.
Doesn't even want the pop filter.
Yeah, doesn't even want the pop filter. That's when you know.
And then she usually cries when she's leaving the room, too.
Night, Dada. Let's see.
Bye. Say night, Dada. Night. I'll be out in a second.
Right. she's like, no, leave me the fuck. It's night on a Sunday. Leave me alone.
She's done.
Yeah, so How to Train Your Dragon 3, we're going to do that next week. I'm going to end the pod, by the way, with the theme song from Frasier.
I wanted to do the song from the Pokemon one I found.
That TikTok thing?
It's such a good song.
Oh, God, that song stinks.
That was a great song. All the responses I got were how it was good.
It did get stuck in my head a little bit. We have to end it with Frasier.
I agree.
And you
I
know
agree.
That.
I love it so much. Trolling Liz with the Frasier theme is my new favorite Big of Truth gag.
Oh, it's going to happen. I can't wait for tomorrow. Can't wait.
Can we just start? I'm gonna write the song. Let's make a new song, a new intro song for Big If True, just using the Frasier theme.
Oh, do we have time for them? Ooh.
I might have time to record that tomorrow if I come in early enough.
Okay. All right. Well, go watch.
You'll be so mad. Wait, but actually, oh, never mind. I'll figure it out.
Tune in to Big If True to see if this bit, that's also the acronym, plays out. All right. For Ken, Jack, and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you on Thursday.
Have a good week at the box office.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?
Now let me see if I understand you. The problem I think you said.
Oh my.
And maybe I'm often misconstrued, but babe, I'll never pull your leg.
Mercy.
Just don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Calling again.
Quite stylish.
Salads and scrambled eggs. A world full of circles and those square pegs. The blues is always calling toss salads and scrambled eggs. They're making me ya-ya. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. The blues is always calling toss salads and scrambled eggs. Thank you.
hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.
Hey, this is Casey Smith. Thank you for enjoying the Barstool Podcast Network. As a reward for making it to the end of the show, I just wanted to let you know about a special deal just for you. You can now use promo code STORE10 for 10% off the entire Barstool Sports store. So before you start that next episode, head over there now and get ready for St. Patrick's Day with all your favorite gear. That's STORE10 for 10% off everything on store.barstoolsports.com. Just don't tell anybody.